Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about betonline.ag. It's the final home stretch before the basketball playoffs. It's a duel in the East for spots 2 through 8. In the West, teams 6 through 9 are all separated by just one game. New Orleans, Phoenix, Sacramento, Los Angeles, they're all battling it out to avoid that play-in and make it to the playoffs. We have got you covered with all the odds, props, promos, and parlays, and you can pick up a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at BetOnline using the link in the description to this episode using our promo code BLEAV, BLEAV. BetOnline, where the game starts. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good night. However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping on into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy podcast, live on the Bleav Podcast Network. Except it isn't live because it is, as always, a podcast. And podcasts aren't live. It's the whole purpose of this podcasting thing. You can listen however and whenever it is that you so choose. And we appreciate that you have decided to stop in however and whenever it is that you may be choosing. We have got a fantabulous episode coming at you today. UConn won the national championship in men's college basketball. The team everyone predicted at the start of the tournament would win it, and they ran roughshod over the entire sport and never lost by more than double digits in any tournament game. It's all wild and crazy. But our friend Reza Rosenthal will join us tomorrow to wrap up the men's side of the tournament. So if you were coming here looking for some college basketball talk, we do not have it today. Instead, we are going to talk about a news story that broke last week that we have now taken 6 days to gather information, research, and dissect all the information on. And it's a story that we have been following for about a year that has a startling new development around the relocation of the Oakland Athletics Major League Baseball team out of Oakland to Las Vegas, now including a pit stop in our hometown of Sacramento, California. Interesting little twist and turn as it relates to this story that is really unprecedented. Like, if you stop and think about major professional sports in America since the 1980s, which 1980s is when you stop seeing teams that really like move around or do temporary homes, because that's when the money kind of started to hit in sports and you actually started to build a stronger sense of regional identity around some of these teams. That's not to say that like before 1980 you didn't have regional identification with teams, but a team like the Sacramento Kings, for example, played in 9 different cities in 30 years. And granted, that's the most statistical anomaly of an example, but like back in the 1970s, the Boston Celtics, who won 11 championships in 13 years, the Boston Celtics were playing like 5 nights a year in Hartford and like playing a traveling circus around the East just as a way to try and generate revenue and money. So like the 1980s is kind of when these teams all become financially viable institutions that only need one central location with a stadium, stadiums that are very often publicly funded. And since the 1980s, the only real comparison for something like this of a temporary home in another city would be the 1 year that the Montreal Expos played in Puerto Rico before moving to Washington, D.C. and becoming the Nationals. And even that season, they were basically owned by Major League Baseball and were this winding traveling circus because baseball was talking about contraction as being a possibility back in the early 2000s. And you could point to like the Chargers moving to a soccer stadium for three seasons while SoFi was being built when they left San Diego and moved to Los Angeles, which ironically enough, I lived in San Diego when the Chargers moved out of San Diego as well. So we're just hitting all the relocation possibilities. But at least moving to Carson was still basically in Los Angeles. Like, what this move is Oakland picking up, moving to a completely new city for three and possibly four seasons before they pick up and go to Las Vegas. And I was talking to some people around Sacramento, and the vibe around that is basically like, as these 3 or maybe 4 years go on and the A's play here, the A's are going to start to become a staple. It's going to feel a little bit normal to have the A's play over 240 baseball games in the Sacramento area. So today on the show, I wanted to talk about the Oakland A's move to Sacramento. How did we get here? Why is this happening? And why nothing like this has ever happened before? And then just talking about some of the morals and ethics of sports relocation. Those are kind of the three points I want to touch on today. How we got here, why this unprecedented decision is happening, and then looking at kind of the macros of relocation in sports. And the third point will make sense once we talk about the first two points. But first, let's talk about how we got here. For 25 years, the Oakland Athletics have been looking for a stadium deal with the city of Oakland, including public financing. And the Oakland A's won three straight championships in the 1970s in Major League Baseball, and in the 1980s they went to the World Series and eventually won it in 1988. They were originally the team that lost on the famous Kirk Gibson home run to the Dodgers in 87. They lose to the Dodgers in 87, win the World Series in 88. I believe they won the World Series in 89 or 90 with Tony La Russa and Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco. And even into the 90s, the A's are still a respectable baseball team. The A's ended up in Oakland in the first place because at the turn of post-World War II America, sports teams were starting to move out to the West Coast because you had this gigantic expansion of economics in California. People were moving from the ease of commercial travel made it easier to move by train or by plane across the country. And so people were moving to California. California was getting this giant investment in resources from the FDR and Truman administrations and later the Eisenhower administration as part of World War II expansion. And in the 1950s, the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants both pick up from New York and move to the West Coast. The Dodgers and the Giants, they begin playing on the West Coast in, I believe, 1958. And a bunch of other teams follow in the decade that follows. The most notable example of this is the Philadelphia Athletics moving to Oakland, which is part of East Bay, but is in and of itself its own city. And so you have two Northern California teams. You have the Dodgers, the expansion California Angels, which then becomes the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, which then becomes the Los Angeles Angels, which is now just the Angels. That team is an expansion in the 1960s. San Diego gets an expansion team in the 1960s. And within about 12 years, you go from having zero baseball teams in California to five baseball teams in California, which at the time was nearly 20% of the entire league. It went from having zero baseball teams in California to over 20% of the league being in California. Three Southern California teams, two Northern California teams. You have San Francisco, Oakland, Los Angeles, Anaheim, and San Diego. And so the Oakland A's, after moving, win a championship in 1970, 1971, 1972. They win in 1988. The 87, they went to the World Series. They win another one, I believe, in 89. The Oakland A's are one of the more successful baseball programs in all of Major League Baseball, despite the fact that they have a revolving door of ownership. Charlie Werner, I want to say, is the original owner of the A's. He is notorious for being a bombastic, loud owner. He ends up selling the team in the 70s at like way less than what market value was. He's also famous for tearing down the team that won three consecutive championships and seeing them all disperse everywhere. In the 90s, they trade all the players who were responsible for their championship team. Tony La Russa goes and manages the St. Louis Cardinals. Mark McGwire ends up on the Cardinals. Jose Canseco bounces around to a whole bunch of different teams. And then you have the Moneyball Oakland A's under new ownership, who, if you've ever seen the Billy Beane movie, you know, Oakland A's use analytics to evaluate talent in a way that's better than other teams. They go on a magical 20-game win streak when no one expected anything good from them. It gets turned into a book by Michael Lewis about Billy Beane, and then it becomes a movie with Brad Pitt. Yay! And they have big-time players. The premise of that book and that movie at the beginning is that at the end of the 2001 season, a year where the A's won the AL West, made it back to the playoffs, at the end of 2001, their team gets picked apart by big money franchises that the A's refuse to spend against. Johnny Damon goes to the Boston Red Sox, Jason Giambi goes to the New York Yankees, Jason Isringhausen goes to, I want to say, the Royals or the Mets, but he leaves the Oakland A's, and then the Oakland A's turn to Moneyball to win whilst not spending a lot of money, which, hey, if you can succeed while not spending a lot of money, the capitalist baseball owners are going to be very, very happy and interested about how you're able to win while not spending money. And so then it's the early analytics revolution in baseball, and Oakland is at the forefront of it. And it's just this really interesting baseball franchise that has a very interesting 35-year history between the championships in the 70s to the championships in the 80s to Moneyball in the early 2000s. You just have this really interesting story around the Oakland A's. Like, no franchise is very much equal or similar to the Oakland A's themselves. So the Oakland A's for about 25 years have a revolving door of ownership that tears down very good teams, cuts costs, cheap ownership. That's the premise of the entire movie of Moneyball, is cheap ownership. And in 2005, the Oakland A's go up for sale again. And the winning bid is a group led by Reggie Jackson, legendary Oakland A's player of the 1970s, and a bunch of business people who are willing to buy the A's at a record high valuation. And Bud Selig, commissioner of Major League Baseball, intervenes and awards the team to an equal bid for John Fisher, heir to the Gap fortune and Bud Selig's fraternity brother. And so Bud Selig gets him a good deal to get into baseball, and the Fisher group gets approved over this group that would have been headed by former star Reggie Jackson and a bunch of other business people. And that's where everything starts turning a bit more sour in the relationship between Oakland and the Athletics, because John Fisher comes in. He does not necessarily have baseball acumen, and as soon as he takes over the team, they do not spend money on big money free agents. The Oakland A's have not spent over $100 million on a free agent at any point in the John Fisher tenure. The highest priced free agent they've ever signed was Eric Chavez to what was, I believe, a $90 million six-year contract at one point. But that's the highest contract ever signed by the John Fisher regime. They don't spend money on the team. They find a way to have a winning team in the early 2010s with John Lester and later Yoenis Cespedes and a whole bunch of other players. And they actually do build a winning team. Billy Butler played for them for a minute. They actually build a competitive team that makes it to the playoffs and loses to the Kansas City Royals, who end up going on to lose in the World Series that year after playing an epic wild card game where the Royals come back from behind a whole bunch of runs. But in the first decade of Fisher's ownership, the conversation is all about getting a stadium deal done. And there is, to make a long story short, 25 years of back and forth between the city of Oakland and the A's in funding a new stadium for them, separate from the Raiders, because remember at this time the Oakland Raiders are still playing at the old Coliseum, and there's argument that like we cannot build two brand new stadiums. At the same time, Joe Lacob has purchased the Golden State Warriors and has made it clear from the very beginning, I want to put this team in San Francisco. From the very beginning, Lacob said, we want to move from Oakland into San Francisco. By the way, the reason why the Golden State Warriors are called the Golden State Warriors is because when they moved to Oakland in the 1970s, the Warriors thought it would be bad for business to put the words Oakland Warriors on their jersey. So they went from San Francisco Warriors to Golden State Warriors, because at the time they were one of two NBA franchises, or one of three NBA franchises in California, and the only one that was in Northern California. So Oakland and the city of Oakland and the A's have this long back and forth battle that has all sorts of winding twists and turns, from the San Francisco Giants blocking a stadium deal in San Jose because it would enter their territorial rights according to baseball, to the city having a deal breakdown for a building at the current location of the Coliseum, to a project on the waterfront in Jack London Square that for close to 5 years was going back and forth on a project, to having public votes get shot down. It's just a 20-year battle between the city of Oakland and the A's for publicly financing a private stadium, which California state will not do. The state of California will not, under any circumstances, publicly fund private sports stadiums, which is a good idea. There has detailed data over decades that shows public subsidies for sports stadiums do not add proper economic value to cities. These are private enterprises. When we publicly finance stadiums, we don't actually get any value in return because you still pay full price. It's not like we're publicly financing it and therefore we get discounted admission to games. No, you're still paying full price. It's still a business. It's still a corporation. There is no financial impact. But in the 1980s, owners started leveraging people's emotional connections to teams in order to get public financing of stadium deals done. It became a cultural norm. City after city started publicly financing stadiums. And another thing that affected it was, this was back when building a sports stadium was still a relatively affordable thing. Like, you could build a sports stadium for $30 million by 1990s money, or $20 million by 1990s money. And now sports stadiums are billion-dollar enterprises. And the reason that is the case is because if you own the rights to a billion-dollar real estate value, that increases the rights to your sports. That increases your franchise valuation, and increases in franchise valuation lead to higher revenues for the entire sport. Sports ownership has become, in part, running a team, and in also a bigger factor, real estate deals. Owning sports teams have become real estate deals. And so Oakland is fighting for years to try and put together a deal, and nothing ever comes through. One project gets blown up, they move on from San Jose to the current Coliseum site to Jack London Square. Public votes for financing of stadiums, all of it gets shot down. 20 years, they're trying. Baseball says Oakland and Tampa are the two cities that are the most egregious examples of trying to get stadium deals done. And so what happens in 2019 is that they finally come to an agreement on financing from the city on a Jack London Square waterfront billion-dollar stadium deal for the A's. They have a financing agreement in place. Oakland has committed, I believe it was $300 million to the project. And then the pandemic happens in early 2020. And every step along the way that they had been plotting on the Jack London Square Stadium deal is put on pause because the pandemic changes a lot about the city of Oakland. First and foremost, there is a brain drain of people moving out of the Bay Area. So people are moving out of the Bay to places like Texas and Florida because the work from home lockdown period made it such that people could work and live anywhere. So you have this brain drain of people leaving the Bay Area. Property values go down in the Bay. Oakland itself becomes... In the tech revolution, Oakland itself became what is in essence a suburb of Silicon Valley at times, where Silicon Valley money pushed out people who used to live in relatively affordable places. Oakland itself becomes more of this like suburb of San Francisco itself. But the city of Oakland itself sees a whole bunch of people leaving the city itself. And also, Oakland doesn't have this great reputation of being a well-to-do city. And the city itself, these people who are moving to Oakland as a more affordable option to live in the Bay Area and commuting, those people are just leaving altogether. And Oakland has an interesting battle going on between public financing and the pandemic that ultimately sees the end of the Jack London Square deal getting done. The A's will tell you that the city never came back to the table. The city will tell you that they had a deal in place and the A's chose to abandon it. Which is true and which is not is kind of up in the air to this point, but for the most part, the city and the A's just never come back to the table on Jack London Square. So that's how we get to this point. Now we get to why the A's are going to Sacramento. Last year, 2023, the Oakland A's were threatened by other Major League Baseball owners to either get a stadium deal done or they would pull them off of revenue sharing. What is revenue sharing? I'm so glad you're asked. It is social safety nets and socialism for billionaires. It says that in Major League Baseball, if you're one of the 30 teams, you are guaranteed 50-some-odd percent of gate revenues across the league and regional television contracts pooled among the various teams. So the A's, just like every Major League Baseball team, are guaranteed $60 million in revenue every single year, no matter what. The Major League Baseball teams that pool in billions of in revenue are required to put a certain percentage into revenue sharing, and every team is dispersed $60 million, $1.8 billion distributed evenly among all 30 teams. Social safety net for baseball. Socialism for billionaires. It's an awesome strategy. I wish we did socialism for other people as well, instead of Major League Baseball creating social safety nets to make sure that their teams are never in jeopardy of going into financial ruin. I bring this up because the Oakland A's are the perfect example of just how little money you can spend on a Major League Baseball team and still be profitable, because the A's took that $60 million and put it in their pocket, and they used $30 million of it to fund the team, operate the Coliseum, staff the Coliseum, and staff their front offices, and they went as cheap as they possibly could to keep that team afloat. After the MLB lockout in 2021, this is 2 years after the pandemic, the Jack London Square deal is dead. What the A's do, without a guarantee of a stadium deal, is they follow the playbook for relocation, which is tear down the roster, convince people to stop showing up to games, and when people do stop showing up to games, use that as the public reason for why you're leaving a city. It's a playbook that the Seattle Supersonics used, that the Sacramento Kings tried to use when they were getting ready to sell to Seattle and move to Anaheim in the early 2000s. It's a strategy that the Chargers used. It's a strategy that the Raiders used it in parts. It is a tried and true relocation playbook strategy for 30 plus years. Tear down the roster, people stop showing up, use people not showing up and low attendance as the reason for moving, when in reality it's about getting a better stadium deal done in another city. The Oakland A's, who won the equivalent of 100 games in 2020 during the shortened pandemic season and had the number one record in the AL West over the Houston Astros, the Oakland A's traded away all-star third baseman Matt Chapman, all-star first baseman Matt Olson, who when he went to the Atlanta Braves ended up hitting 50 home runs in his first full season with the Braves in 2023. They traded away Marcus Semien, who went on to be an MVP finalist with the Texas Rangers. They traded away Jonah Heim, starting catcher in the All-Star game for the American League last year. They traded away Sean Murphy, starting catcher for the National League in last year's All-Star game. They traded away 8 All-Star players, 6 of whom ended up playing in either last year's ALCS or NLCS. They traded away the entire team, gutted it. Second worst record in all of baseball in 2022. Came back last year and through June had the worst start to a season since any baseball team in over 100 years. Put together an abysmal product. Lowest spending team in baseball. Didn't put any investment in their front offices. People losing jobs. Barely staffed the Coliseum. They were running an experiment of just how little money you can spend to operate a functional baseball team. Attendance numbers below 5,000, which is worse than double A numbers in some cities. Gutted the roster, gutted the team. And in 2023, baseball said, you need to get a stadium deal done or we're pulling your $60 million in revenue sharing. And since the A's had virtually no other revenue, they were like, ah, shit, we gotta go get us a stadium deal. And in 3 months, they went to Las Vegas, negotiated a stadium deal, and had the Las Vegas legislature vote on a deal to approve $340 million in spending, which included a special session for 4 extra days. For those who don't know, and why would you know? I learned it last year when it was going on. The Nevada State Legislature meets for 3 months out of the year, and that's it. Other than those 3 months, the people who serve in the state legislature go and have other jobs. Like they work other jobs 9 months out of the year and spend 3 months going to Carson City and passing all the legislation for the year. And at the end of those 3 months, they did not vote on a stadium deal for the A's, did not vote on a public financing package. And then the governor of Nevada, who was trying to push this stadium deal through, added 4 days of extra session for a hearing on the Oakland A's, and there was one other topic that they heard about, but mostly was just for the Oakland A's because the governor wanted to make sure this happened. And even though there were concerns from people in the legislature about the terms of the deal, they wanted to put in some provisions for the Oakland A's, they ended up making no edits, the deal got pushed through, and the A's could go to Major League Baseball and say, we have a deal done in Las Vegas, even though the deal they signed was incredibly unreasonable, very vague, and involved building on the Tropicana site, which is a casino on the strip in Nevada, in Las Vegas, where they were talking about building a retractable roof, which needs twice as much land to build a retractable roof stadium as they were approved for with the 9 acres on the Tropicana site. So they can't even build a retractable roof stadium on that site without it being larger, and they don't own the real estate around the area. So many concerns, so many questions with the stadium deal. It didn't particularly make sense, but the A's got a stadium deal done, and so they got to keep their $60 million in revenue sharing from Major League Baseball. And by the way, Major League Baseball approved the deal itself. So fast forward to the end of last season. You have protests all summer from the people in Oakland, and the fans in Oakland are in a really tough bind with everything going on with the stadium deal, but the fans in Oakland came out and protested the team, and the attendance was awful, and the team had the worst record in baseball. And by the way, thanks to the baseball lottery, they don't even get the top pick in the draft anymore. But the A's were the worst team in baseball last year, second worst team in baseball in 2022. They are just a terrible, terrible, truly terrible baseball team for the last three seasons. And they are gutting the roster, gutting the team, and spending the bare minimum possible to invest in Oakland, because John Fisher is not only trying to move the team, he's also a really bad businessman. Really bad at business. And what he ended up getting was a temporary stadium deal in Sacramento with who is regarded as another not-so-great businessman, Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Sacramento Kings. And these two men just came to an agreement that essentially said the A's will play three seasons in Sacramento and one season potentially after that, depending on the progress of the Tropicana Stadium deal. And the reason the Oakland A's chose to move to Sacramento is as cold-hearted as this specific reason. The Oakland A's have a television deal with NBC Sports California that pays them $71 million per year up until 2032, I want to say. That $71 million per year gets nulled and voided if the A's move out of the Bay Area. Sacramento would be out of the Bay Area per the terms of that deal. However, the Oakland A's went to NBC Sports California and negotiated a smaller term TV deal for them to play in Sacramento because NBC Sports California is the station that broadcasts Sacramento Kings games and San Jose Sharks games. So the A's got a deal with their regional television partner that we don't know the details of yet, but I'm sure we'll pay them pretty close to that $71 million per year deal. And Sacramento is going to help bail them out for a few years so that they don't have to go to the Coliseum and renegotiate an extended lease. Because after this baseball season, the A's no longer have a lease at the Coliseum. 2024 was the last year they were there. The A's didn't want to negotiate with the city. The city offered them a deal that required Fisher to sell his half of the Coliseum lease, which will happen at some point, but he wasn't going to do that now. And so what you now have is businessman A, John Fisher, businessman B, Vivek Ranadive, owner of the Sacramento Kings and the stadium, Sutter Health Park in Sacramento, that the A's are going to play at, negotiating a behind-the-scenes deal that, hey, I don't even know if it's beneficial to one or the other, but it's two sports businessmen with a reputation for making poor business deals and running poor organizations coming together and creating a backdoor deal that will help the A's not have to go back to Oakland, but also make it so they don't have to go to Las Vegas until their new stadium deal is done. And the reason the A's wanted to do that is that they didn't want the enthusiasm of the A's being there to die because they were going to play at the AAA ballpark for the A's in the first place. And also that AAA ballpark, you're not allowed to play games post summer after until 7 o'clock p.m. All games start after 7 o'clock p.m. because it's just so fucking hot in the middle of the desert. And it's an outdoor stadium of 10,000 people. And the A's wanted to make sure if we're going to make a move to Las Vegas, we're going to do it right, which is move to Las Vegas when we have a stadium ready and built. Which, by the way, there's no guarantee that they will have a stadium ready and built because the plan that they have to build on the Tropicana will not work if they want to put a retractable roof on the billion-dollar stadium. So backdoor deal gets done between Sacramento and Oakland, which, at this point, you look up and say, why is this happening when it hasn't happened in years past? And the reason that is the case is because if, for example, when the Seattle Supersonics were moving to Oklahoma City and they needed 3 years to build a stadium in Oklahoma City, which was not the case, but I'm just using this as a basic example. If the Seattle Supersonics said, we're going to stop off in Spokane, Washington for three seasons, and then we're going to go to Oklahoma City and play inside a 5,000-seat stadium. If that had been proposed back in 2007, the National Basketball Association would have shut that shit down. There is a level of oversight that exists in the sport with both the commissioner and the power of authority and the other owners needing a 75% vote to allow this to work. And the reason this is allowed to happen and John Fisher is allowed to do whatever he wants is that baseball has essentially taken a hands-off, laissez-faire approach on trying to govern the Oakland A's and their relocation to Las Vegas. Baseball has said, the owners and Commissioner Rob Manfred have said, you can do whatever the fuck you want. We'll even waive the relocation fee. We will not take a $500 million relocation fee from John Fisher because we know he ain't got that money. We know he's not getting a good deal in Las Vegas. He's getting a fine deal in Las Vegas. They're paying like close to 30% of the $1.2 billion stadium. But it's not a great deal by any stretch of the imagination. And he ain't got cash like that. And we know he ain't got cash like that because the only reason his team is still a functioning organization is because of our money. Is because of our $2 billion per owner that's going to him in revenue sharing. And so baseball ownership has basically taken a complete hands-off, laissez-faire approach to the Oakland A's. And Rob Manfred, because he works for the owners, he has taken a hands-off approach to the A's and basically said, you can do whatever you want. And when Rob Manfred makes a statement last week saying he's excited for the A's journey to Sacramento on their way to Las Vegas, you know he's not happy about that because no other commissioner in the history of baseball would have allowed this shit to go down. It would not be the case. And baseball has completely failed the city of Oakland. They've completely failed the Oakland A's fans because they've taken a hands-off approach for one of the worst businessmen in that sport. Genuinely, one of the worst businessmen to own a professional sports franchise. The incompetence of John Fisher in this whole process cannot be overstated for a baseball team that has been terrible for the good majority of his entire run with the team. And as soon as they get good and the bill comes true to try and keep them good, it's back to being a crappy organization for the late 2000s, mid 2010s, and now early 2020s. Which, for example, this is the worst of the worst because they've been the worst team in baseball by record since I moved out to Sacramento in June of 2022. The worst team in baseball. While all of their former stars are winning World Series with the Texas Rangers and going to World Series with the Atlanta Braves and playing for the Dodgers, all their former stars, Marcus Semien and Jonah Heim, instrumental pieces of a World Series champion Texas Ranger team last season. Instrumental to winning world championships is former Oakland A's players getting shipped off to other teams on good deals because the A's are incompetent at running a professional sports organization. And baseball has taken a complete hands-off approach to let this terrible businessman run an organization into the ground with zero oversight in a way that they absolutely and emphatically would have had oversight on other relocations and other stadium deal situations like what's happening in Oakland. And this is the one where they have decided we're going to take a complete hands-off approach. And that is an added slap in the face to Oakland on the way out the door on a long list of transactions that are going to be held against Rob Manfred at the end of his baseball tenure as commissioner. And so now the Oakland A's will move to Sacramento, who, by the way, back in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s Moneyball era, there were a lot of A's fans in Sacramento. Sacramento's about 100 miles away from the Coliseum, and the Oakland A's back in the 80s and 90s were competing with the Giants for the entertainment dollar. And instead of going west into the Bay and south into San Jose and Santa Clara to try and convince Giants fans to be Oakland A's fans, the A's purposefully went east to places like Sacramento and Reno, which is another 100 miles out from Sacramento, And they said, hey, you guys should come be Oakland A's fans. You guys should come be Oakland Raider fans. And there's this big contingent of Raiders and A's fans who lived in Sacramento. And most of those fans have been, like the Oakland A fan, completely dejected by this organization and turned off by the team's poor performance, inability to support players and put a winning product on the field, and simultaneously working to move the team out of Oakland for about 10 years, or at least leveraging the threat of moving out of Oakland for close to 10 years. And so the A's will move to Sacramento. There will be protests from Oakland fans who come to Sacramento like next year on opening day. But then after that, it's just going to kind of be the A's existing in Sacramento for 3 and maybe 4 seasons. And I think it's so interesting that that is what's about to happen because of this last point that I want to talk about, which is sports fandom, which is that even through the decades, the sports fan has remained interested in the ins and outs of the organization, but the ins and outs have completely changed. For example, the sports fan probably knows more about analytics and numbers than they would have paid attention to back in the pre-Moneyball 90s and 2000s era. Additionally, sports fans are required to follow real estate transactions and inform themselves on real estate transactions because of the threat that your team could be moved out of a city at any given point. And at the end of it all, I think Oakland will be better off. The city will have a chance to regroup. The city will have a chance to recalibrate. And 2 to 3 years after you have a relocation, you don't really have the same hard feelings like as intensely as they've been the last couple years for the A's. Like, life will go on. The city of Oakland will regroup and recalibrate. They might never get another Major League Baseball team. Heck, they probably won't ever get another Major League Baseball team. However, the city will adjust. The city will recalibrate the same way that San Diego adjusted and recalibrated after the Chargers left under relatively similar circumstances back in the early 2010s. But sports fandom and sports teams, and I hear this said a lot, and it's a great point, which is that sports teams should be community property. Individual property rights can exist, but the community should be the one who owns the intellectual property of the team. Because these teams traffic so much in emotion and feel good, and yes, they're worth a lot of money, and so people are willing to spend a lot of money to buy these major professional sports teams. But the intellectual property of the team belongs to the community, because the community is the one who's rallying around the sports team. And the Oakland community, which got a baseball team by proxy in the same way that they're about to lose one. You know, the Philadelphia A's leaving Philadelphia and coming to Oakland the same way that the A's are now leaving to go to Las Vegas. It's how they got there in the first place. But after 60 years, the intellectual property of the team becomes a part of a community, especially a team like Oakland that has such a deep, nuanced, and rich history of baseball success and changing the sport. But over 30 years, that's all been torn away. And now that you're going to do the last deed of taking the team away, the intellectual property belongs with Oakland. The intellectual property belongs with Sacramento. And Sacramento's going to get 3-year run with the A's, and they're going to help John Fisher make a quick buck on the way out of town, because they will sell 14,000 seats to that minor league baseball stadium. It's the largest minor league baseball stadium in the country, but they will sell 14,000 seats to a lot of these games. And if John Fisher wants to make a quick business deal with his buddy Vivek Ranadive and make a quick buck on the way out the door, and baseball's not going to stop him from doing something like that because of trying to respect the communities with which they partner with, or just trying to work to keep the A's in Oakland, which baseball gave up on a decade ago. But if baseball is going to allow these guys to have this backdoor deal that may or may not be good for either party, and baseball is just going to take a hands-off, laissez-faire approach and without oversight, let this guy do whatever he wants without relocation fees, without oversight, without intervening when he tries to make a business deal like this in Sacramento instead of telling him to put up or shut up and go back to the city of Oakland. Baseball's letting him do what he wants, and I don't know if the deal will work out for Fisher or not. I don't know if the deal will work out for Ronadive or not, but the thing that sucks is that the intellectual property of the city is about to be moved. And you can go through a 20-year relocation battle and learn about San Jose stadium deals and public financing ballots and put in all this effort, and at the end of the day, the end result will be a team moving out of town that you are better than. Okay, Oakland A fan, you are better than John Fisher. The Oakland A's community, I've seen it at these reverse boycotts, these protests. We've been talking about it since last year. We did an episode in April about this. We did an episode in June about the stadium deal getting done in Las Vegas and the reverse boycott. The Oakland A fan and the Oakland A community is so much better than this team. They deserve so much more, and the leaders of baseball failed them time and time again, from Bud Selig to Manfred. This is Major League Baseball is the reason this is the case. John Fisher's a crappy person and a crappy owner, but there are a lot of crappy owners in sports that don't do what the Oakland A's are doing to their community, which is not only leave them at the end, but basically tell them, fuck you, and be vindictive on the way out the door. Oakland A's are purposefully being vindictive against their fans, whether it's closing off the parking lot opening day until 2.5 hours before the game, causing backup traffic for miles long going into the Coliseum because they knew that there would be reverse boycotts instead of people going to the actual opening day game, which, by the way, the opening day game only generated 13,000 paid admission tickets, which will be less than capacity in Sacramento for a Wednesday game against the fucking Tampa Bay Rays. Whether it's punishing the fans by not allowing them to come into the stadium at the end, whether it's turning off comments on all of their social media posts, whether it's Rob Manfred going publicly and saying, well, the Oakland, doing Fisher's bidding by saying, well, the Oakland A fan never showed up to this game or whatever it is. It's like, time and time again, there have been slaps in the face, vindictive moves on the way out of Oakland, hard feelings across the board. Like, Fisher has made it clear that he does not like the Oakland A's fans and the city of Oakland when they say mean things about him or organize boycotts and do all of these things that the community has led, which I think have been commendable for the fact that they've still been trying, even though it's become clear with the writing on the wall that this is not going to go the way that they want it to go. It's been commendable that they've organized all these boycotts and protests and things of these sorts to try and pressure Fisher to stop running the team into the ground before he moves it out of Oakland altogether, so that the Oakland A fan can't even go to the game when they have a halfway decent product, which will not happen very often. But I say all of that just to bring up the same point, which is like, even at the end of it all, the intellectual property of the Oakland A's belongs to that community, and the A's are going to go somewhere else, and they're not going to be as important as they were before. And to most people, they won't notice much of a difference. But for the people of Oakland and for the people of Sacramento who have been rooting and watching this team forever, to have the team ultimately the end, I mean, they're going to make a detour to Sacramento in a really unprecedented situation. But at the end of it all, the end game is that they will likely move out to Las Vegas, assuming they can figure out whatever is happening with that stadium deal. And when that happens and the official death of the Oakland A's comes to fruition, it's going to be something that happens time and time again, but shouldn't happen in the way it does, because there need to be more protections in place to protect the communities like Oakland who still truly do support that team without wanting to support it enough to publicly finance a billionaire's private billion-dollar stadium. You know, take public money to put it in the pockets of this man who has run the team into the ground time and time again. you know, there should not be a medium between the team is leaving altogether and we are not willing to support publicly funding private enterprises for billionaires. It's just not the way that this thing is going to go. And that buffer in between is the intellectual property belongs to the city. And Fisher, there should be more oversight and protection, even if it comes at the expense of the mighty dollar. And baseball has decided that is not going to be the case. And the end result is that the people of Oakland will be punished. And I commend them for their efforts and continued protests and boycotts. I'll be out there during the summer to protest and boycott along with the Oakland A fan, as I will next year on opening day when the A's come to Sacramento. Trust me, we will have more content around the summer of protest and the Oakland A's when they move to Sacramento, because I will be out there opening day 2025 protesting with the Oakland A fans who drive out from Oakland 100 miles, about an hour and a half, to come to Sacramento to protest on opening day. Trust me when I say I will be out there protesting along with them. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to the Take It Easy podcast, and thank you for all of your continued support on the show. 5-star reviews, downloads, subscribing, all of it is greatly appreciated. You guys continue to bring all sorts of fun and wonderful support and make it fun for me to come here and put together these fine and dandy podcasts every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday for much of the last 6 years. 6 calendar years. 5 years total. We're coming up on our 5-year anniversary, but 6 calendar years of putting together this fun Take It Easy podcast and finding ways to support our dreams. We thank you for your time. We hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And as always, take it easy.